The great philosopher Kierkegaard said, "Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards." Looking back only results in learning for people who have that time to think. And many of us are so busy with day-to-day demands that we rarely have time to reflect. And that's why we started What I Wish I Knew. It's for those moments when you realize that just a bit of insight might have come in handy if you had it in advance. I'm Mike Irwin.
And I'm Simon Dorr. So we talk with people from all walks of life, from startup entrepreneurs to Fortune 500 CEOs, professional athletes to weekend warriors, from artists and to designers to even engineers who became designers, from those who dream to those who dream then actually do. They all have three things in common. None are perfect, all are humble, and each have truly incredible learnings. In What I Wish I Knew, they share these lessons with you.
Join us at whatiwishinewshow.com. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And please share and subscribe to What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dorr.
Okay.
Welcome to What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dorr. Our guest today is really interesting, and I kind of want to reflect back that I think it was about 15 or 16 years ago, I was watching TV because I'm a college football fan, and I saw this guy just tearing it up, and he absolutely ran through the other team that day on the way to setting an all-time NCAA record for yards in a game by a running back. And that young man was Prince Daniels Jr., who we're so glad to have on our show today. So welcome, Prince.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Glad you're here. So Prince went on that day to set the NCAA record for rushing, and then he went on to get to play in the NFL with the Baltimore Ravens. And unfortunately, it didn't work out the way that he'd hoped because of injury. And in a lot of ways, Prince, I mean, that's kind of a problem that many people have, is we set off to something and things happen and we have to kind of shift. And so what Prince did is he shifted over into, you know, into mindfulness as a purpose. And we want to talk about how that happened. But before we get into that, Prince is the author of a new book coming out soon called Mindfulness for the Professional Athlete. And so later in the conversation, we'll want to hear about that. But Prince, welcome to the show, and give us a quick rundown on how did you get here?
Thank you for that intro, and thank you for having me on the show. I want to start off with that. And second, the title of the book is called Mindfulness for the Ultimate Athlete.
Oh, sorry.
And it's okay, Matt. Mindfulness for the Ultimate Athlete, Mastering the Balance Between Power and Peace. And the record that I broke was the most rushing yards in a bowl game. So by a running back. Or just by an athlete. So how did I get here? My father, he's from another country. He's from Ghana, Africa. And my mom, she was from Natchez, Mississippi, and Louisiana, New Orleans, Louisiana. And so they had me, and boom, I just came into this world as a gentle soul, a loving soul. And I was full of love and just wanted to be able to make a difference in the world. And grew up in Mississippi, from there, Mississippi, Louisiana, then moved to Houston later on in life. Stayed with my father, went to high school while I was living with my father. And then I went to Georgia Tech, got accepted into school with my grades, and became a walk-on for football. Earned a scholarship, broke some records, got drafted to the NFL, played three remarkable years, but my career was cut short due to injuries. And then after that, had this self-identity crisis. Tried to commit suicide because just thought that there was nothing left to life. And luckily, I had spent some time at a monastery, and I had a lot of time to do some self-reflection and self-rehabilitation. And so from that, I was able to build my character back up and just remember who I am. And then I saw that there was a need for other players, professional athletes, male, female, to learn how to overcome this transition that we always go through, because a lot of people are reluctant to change. And I just thought that I could be a trailblazer, or just a leader that understands the transition that we go through in life and the transition that we go through when it comes to professional sports. So what transpired from that was me starting a business called Game Beyond the Game, where I help help professional athletes, former or current, with their transitioning out of the game. And we just focus on the basics, which is the mind, the body, and the spirit. We don't focus on the financial part. We just focus on the basic survival needs that you need for life. And on top of that, I wrote a book called Mindfulness for the Ultimate Athlete, Mastering the Balance Between Power and Peace. And that stems from me spending time at the monastery and also my athletic career. So I was able to merge the two to teach players how to become the best versions of themselves and have supreme confidence in their abilities.
Prince, I want to kind of break that up into a few different pieces. And you know, you brought up, you know, an incredible set of experiences. And we also appreciate your candor about, you know, some of the challenges. And there are a lot of people out there that go through challenges that, you know, could benefit from hearing stories like that. So if we just take it in order, I'd love to talk about what happened. You go to Georgia Tech, you know, you get there and, you know, you face challenges there. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about what happened when, you know, a coach talks to you at practice and how you sort of take it from maybe not getting a chance to play to setting a record.
So when you're a walk-on and you're not an invested player, you're at the bottom of the rung. You know? and I laugh and I throw humor in there because those challenging times were what built my character. And so for the most part, it was really difficult when you're not an invested player, when you're a walk-on, because you don't get the same treatment that scholarship players get or investing players get. And so I had to find my own way. I had to navigate through uncharted territory, not really understanding like what's next, what's going to happen, when will I be able to find my next meal, because I ran out of money, so I had to sneak into the cafeteria to see if I can speak to the workers at the cafeteria and just try to find my next, just trying to find a place to fit in. And one thing that my father would always tell me is that you're going to school to get your education. And I was like, yeah, I hear you, Dad, but I really want to play football. And so I had to be able to maintain these two facets of my life, where, you know, there's a social part of your life, there's the athletic part, and your studies. And so you have to discipline yourself, because you can only do two out of those three. You can manage two out of those three, and the most important things were the studies and the athletic part. But the social part, you're gonna have to sacrifice that, you know, in the beginning. And then I guess once you build the popularity, then it becomes a little bit more easier. But for me, the struggle was just showing up every day, knowing that I wasn't really a part of the team, but I was just like just someone that was there, and just having the mindset of that I can make my dreams become a reality. And so there were a lot of things that I had to push through. When my coaches, but one particular coach in general, he was him. He was a tough coach, should I say, for a better lack of term. And he told me that you know, my chances of playing at Georgia Tech are 1 in a million, and my chances of making it to the NFL are 1 in a billion. So maybe, you know, I'll have better luck going to study and you know, like making good grades. But he said, you're probably not going to play here at Georgia Tech. So at 19, which I grew up as a sheltered kid, I had to overcome the debilitating words of a grown man, you know, telling me what I can and cannot do. So I had to really look within myself and see my success within, and then actually make that happen. And so I did, and I didn't know how to do it, but the first thing that I did, I ran home after that same day, but a couple of hours later, like 30 minutes after he told me that, I had a moment where this proverbial moment where it's just like this fork in the road. Like, what do I do? Do I succumb to everything that he said, or do I follow my dreams, my vision? And I decided to follow my dream and my vision. And so I strapped on my backpack and I took off running to the other side of campus, went upstairs, changed my clothes, put my workout clothes on, and I worked out so hard, I passed out the very first day. I woke up the next day. We had workouts in the morning. I ran back to the other side of campus. And I did this for the next 3 months, every single day. And during that time, I started earning the respect from my teammates, because in the morning time, everyone would carpool and go to workouts. And they would stop and be like, hey, Pete, get in the car. And I'm just like, no, no car. I'm running the workouts every single day. And after we work out and I'm extremely exhausted, I run back to the other side of campus, because I was just that determined to make sure that I could make my dream become a reality. And so that's what it was like. So every day, just having the self-discipline to make my dream become a reality.
And I think Prince, on that one, you know, what I think kind of jumps out about that really is the notion that don't allow other people to set your limitations. You know, you set your own limitations instead of someone else.
Right.
The notion of also being really important about having your own vision about where you wanted to go. And then the third part of it, if it makes sense, really is the idea that you got to be willing to lay it on the line and work for it, right?
Right. Yes. You have to be bold. You have to be courageous. You have to, you have to see the vision more than someone else tries to paint a picture for you. You have to believe in yourself more than anybody, more than you want someone else to believe in you. Because the only way that anybody will believe in you is if you believe in yourself. Like, that's the first belief. And then once you believe in yourself, then other people like start to see, like, wow, he's actually doing what he said he was going to do. And then they start believing in you. And then after that, the belief turns into, like, we want you as a leader, because we see that you're capable of doing what a lot of others are not capable of doing. So you would be a great example for a great leader. So yeah, that's, you just have to, you, when you want something so bad, you have to figure out what it's going to take. And if you don't know what it's going to take, just go back to your core values, or what you've done in the past that has allowed you to overcome.
And just on that, Prince, you know, you went to college, as you said, I think you described it was 1 in a billion, you're going to make it or something.
Yeah.
You're a strong person, yeah? Or I get the sense. You're, just describe, I guess, the backdrop to that, because you talked about the sense of purpose there. What did you get from your parents? You know, what was there that was kind of in your DNA, I'm sensing?
Yeah. So, man, you know, without trying to get too involved in it, what I received from my father was this boldness. My dad is from another country, but he was able to come to America with $32 to $33 in his pocket. You know, his story changes. And and he was successful. He started his own company, a recycling company, and was very successful at doing that. So it was that boldness to come from another country, being an African. So he's a black man, considered a black man in America, with all the a lot of odds against you. And just starting your own company and establishing your sense of pride and self, just being able to see, you know, your dream become a reality. And that's what was passed on to me. And Simon, when my dad passed away, and one of the biggest things that I had to do, I had to fly back to Africa, to uncharted territory. There were some family members that I knew, but there was other family members that I did not know. It's like a full village of individuals that I'd never met before. And so now, since I'm the first son, they're asking me for this and they're asking me for that. And like, wait a minute, my dad just passed. Like, I need to figure this out. And so I had to do some difficult things at that time. I had to go and identify my dad's body in a morgue full of 20 dead bodies. And I had to identify, you know, my father. And I never shed a tear until I heard my dad's eulogy read out loud. And that was the first moment when tears started streaming down my face, because I started to realize, like, wow, that's me. That's what I got from my father. That's what was passed down, you know, to me. When I think about going to Georgia Tech, getting in with my grades, but having a mindset of that, I'm going to be the starter here. I'm going to play at Georgia Tech. And so I run into my coach telling me that, you know, your chances of playing here are one in a million, to making that probability become a reality, you know. And so that's what was passed down to me. From my mother's side, it was that love, just that infectious, charismatic personality, just reminding people, like, why are you down? Like, stay up, smile, like, hold your head up high. You know, we are a family, we are a group of individuals, and we go to battle with each other, and we have each other's back. So you are going to always be my brother no matter what. So I need that help sometimes, because I'm also human. But whenever I feel weary and whenever I get down, remind me of what I say to you, because it's only going to sharpen that sword.
So I guess even in that early stage, as you entered college and it was a whole new world, these two aspects of boldness and fearlessness, but also this love, I guess it's kind of a counterbalance, is it? Or it's two things that become a synergistic?
Yes. It's synergistic, because I'd say that I have the best of both worlds. All the way to my formative years until my teen year, just 13, you know, I live with my mother. And so I received that love, that nourishment, that nurturing, of what it feels to love someone, you know, to be able to kiss, and hug, another male without, you know, having any preconceived notion about what that entails or what that means. And then when I went to go live with my father, it was more of the tough love, but also the discipline, the work ethic. And that allowed me to develop into an individual that is loving, but also understand that when it's time to get to work, it is time to get to work, and let's put away all the distractions and focus your mind so much that you can make your reality crystallize itself, make it manifest itself. And that is where the emergence of these two worlds, they come together, and that's where that synergy comes from.
Yeah, fascinating.
Thinking about, so you do this at Georgia Tech, you go there, you set this record, you get to the NFL, and I would imagine at that point in your life, you had these aspirations, and you see kind of your dream coming true, right? And so tell us a little bit about, you know, what were the circumstances around the injury? How were you feeling before it happened? And then what happened afterwards? And And because I think there's an interesting point about transition from one dream to another, but take us through a little bit about the NFL piece, and then we'll go on and talk in a bit about how did you then sort of recover from that, if you will.
So the NFL piece, man, it seemed like my story before the NFL, it was predictable. I knew that in high school or middle school that I would get hurt around a certain point in my life. Like, I would have some success, I would get hurt, and then I would come back, and I would prevail. So in the NFL, it wasn't exactly like that. My rookie year, I came in, and in the preseason, I ended up fumbling twice in that same game. And I'll never forget, one, my best friend, he made me fumble one time, and then the other time, I was trying to run, and I just dropped the ball. Just dropped it. Just took off running. I was like, there's a touchdown, and I dropped the ball. And I remember walking to the sideline, and my coach, Brian Billick, which is an extraordinary coach, a professor of the game. And as I was trying to run to the other end zone to the other side of our bench, He tracked me down. He was walking very fast, very briskly. Just and as soon as I got to the sideline, he was like, "What the F are you doing, PJ? You effing up my money. You effing up your money. Like, get your shit together." And I was just like, "Aha!" So it was a wake-up call, you know. And it was funny because he never really spoke to me. We never had that relationship where it was just like he was a mentor. But he really believed in me. And I just never understood why, because I felt like he was chastising me or just, you know, berating me. Like, why are you getting on me? What did I do? How did I mess up? And my coach had to explain to me, if he's saying something to you, that means he cares. Or he sees something in you that you don't see in yourself. But if he doesn't talk to you, then you should be concerned. And for me, that was a bit of a conundrum, because I'm just like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. That's backwards. But what I had learned was just continue to be a student. You know, so my first year, they didn't think that I was ready to play my rookie year. So that was my developmental phase of being in the NFL. And so what I did, I used my imagination and my mind to say, okay, every time I come out to practice, this is a game for me. And I need to put so much effort into this that I become one of the best running backs in the NFL. Because what I knew, what I had in front of me, was that the Baltimore Ravens were the number one defense at the time. And so I knew if I go against the number one defense every single day, then when I go against the number two, the number three, the number four, and so forth, then I would have a field day. So right now, while I'm in practice, because practice, you know, leads to being somewhat perfect. And I have the opportunity to take advantage of this. And so that's what I did. And every day I start to improve. And every day that I would see myself getting better, and not just myself, but the coaches would see me getting better. They were like, wow, how was he able to do that? And so I started realizing that most of that came from anger. But as I became older, I learned if I would have known a little bit more about mindfulness and meditation, then I would have been able to channel that energy into blossoming to become the best NFL player that I wanted to be. But also mentally, I didn't have any mentors. So my second year comes, get ready to play my second year. I injure myself and now I can't play. I injure my hamstring. And then the third year comes, and right before the season starts, like, I'm the number two running back. As soon as the first guy goes down, I will be the starter. And it seemed like it was the perfect recipe for success. But I ended up injuring myself right before the season begins. And I tore my labrum, a ligament in my shoulder. And from there, it was psychologically, I could not rehabilitate myself. And so basically, I sequestered myself. I went and did my rehab, or I did my surgery back at Georgia Tech, and I did my rehab, and I stayed at Georgia Tech, and I never really showed my face again in Baltimore with the Ravens, because I was still trying to rehabilitate my psyche, who I am, trying to discover that. And I did a really good job, but when I returned, and since I didn't show my face as much as I should have or needed to, they decided to go in another direction. And that was when the self-identity crisis happened, because I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand that I needed to be there, because I didn't know how to say to them, like, psychologically, like, I'm really effed up right now and I need help. And so the lack of communication was what led to me being discharged, and then me not really understanding, like, how my opportunity just slipped away from me. So, and that was my first job. So it really hit me hard. I was very fortunate to not have to work growing up, because my father had his own business, but it really affected me in such a way that I couldn't recapture my bearings. Mentally, I was disconnected. And so that's how my NFL career went. And then after that, it was like, who am I? Who are you? You know, are you this? Are you that? Like, do you know who you are? And luckily, I had an opportunity to spend time at a monastery where I had a time to reflect. And a lot of people don't have time to reflect. The next step is like, I got to keep going. I have to keep going. So I was afforded that opportunity, which allowed me to focus on the principles of life and life in general, because I wanted to be able to, I started to understand that there was life beyond the game, and I needed to understand life in general so that I could have a prosperous life, because if not, only thing that I was going to think about was harming myself. And so that's how my career went.
And Prince, just tell me, you talked about the monastery a few times. Just tell me how you kind of made a decision and got to go, and what was it about, and what was the purpose for you, and what did you get out of it?
So my father, he was also a black belt, so he practiced meditation. And I have two uncles that were just looking to liberate themselves and try to figure out that there's more to this life. And so these were my my mentors, my role models that I looked up to. And so I started practicing a little bit of meditation when I was younger, but it just never really stuck with me. And as I got older, I would continue to see them practicing, and they would go off to this monastery and be gone for some time, and they would come back and they would be glowing. And I'm just like, wow. I've watched a lot of Kung Fu movies, a lot of cartoons, Kung Fu Panda and The Last Avatar. I've seen all these movies, and I started saying to myself, like, there's some type of connection with me being exposed to that. So I was just like, I need to go to the monastery, because I felt that was the only way that I would be able to figure out who I am as an individual once I lost that identity of being a professional athlete. And so I get an opportunity to go to the monastery. So when I go to the monastery, I think there's going to be this grave experience the very first time. And I go there and I'm like, this is nothing in the movies. This is not the angelic or the beautiful thing that I saw in the movies. And the experience was very foreign in the beginning, because I did not know what to expect. And so I had these expectations that were not met. And so it was more of a trying to figure out, like, what am I doing here? Why am I here? The reason, the calling to the monastery was, just felt that this was my last lifeline. And I felt my insides felt that I was more than what my image or my vision of myself was. And so I had to break that mental mold of like, I'm not seeing myself in a good light, but the inside of me is like, you are powerful, you are bold, you are this, you are a prince. But I could not embrace that. And so going to the monastery was a way for me to be able to tap into myself and see what's really inside of me. Why this burning sensation inside of me is saying that I'm capable of doing this, but yet my mental or my mind was telling me, like, no, you failed. In the NFL, you lost your job. You let your family down. Like, who are you? Like, you're nobody. You lost this. You lost that. You lost your condo. You lost your car. You've worked so hard to get to that point, and in a blink of an eye or a snap of a finger, you lost everything. Like, you are nothing anymore. And so there was this conflict. And so being at the monastery allowed for all of those debilitating thoughts to dissolve and allowed for that internal spirit, that burning desire to surface. And they were able to merge. And that's when I was able to realize, like, wow. So it's your mind and your body and your spirit. And once they come into alignment, then you start to, you become thrusted into the zone. And when you're in the zone, you're in the flow of things. And so you're in the flow of life, and you start to understand the principles of life. You start to understand that there are four seasons. And with those four seasons, if you plant a seed in the ground, as time goes on, that tree or that seed will become a tree, and that tree will provide fruit for you that you can use to feed yourself and so forth. And the cycle continues. And so once I started learning those principles of life, then I started really understanding like how life unfolds, how an individual unfolds, and how myself, I started to unfold. So that was the beauty of being able to go to a monastery and spend time there and just really understand who I am. As a human being, as a spiritual being, and the impact that I can make on the world.
Mm-hmm. And just to build on that, Prince, I mean, there's kind of that saying that we sort of live our lives between our ears, right? And the idea that so much of our, maybe our identity, you know, is locked up in what we think, the thoughts that we have, you know, the view that we have of who we are. And sort of therein lies maybe our own constraints, because it's how we see ourselves, but also our own potential.
Correct.
And talk a little bit about, you know, if you were to tell someone or share with someone what you wish, someone who doesn't know anything about mindfulness and about what it can do for you, what do you wish they knew about it? And you know, if you were to say, give a 30-second, you know, rundown on mindfulness, what would you say?
I would say it is the foundation to your sanity. And it's something, it's an exercise that needs to be exercised every day, because when you start your day off, you start it off with the mindset. You choose to have a bad day, you choose to have a good day. And so being mindful of how you plant your 2 feet on the ground when you get out of bed is much more powerful and much more impactful than anything in the world. And the thing is, the reason why we lose our sense of ourselves, because we give so much of ourselves away and we don't have any reserve for us. So being mindful of spending time with yourself in the morning time, because you are a person. We forget that, because like you said, we live between these two ears and we forget that we are a person, because we are constantly interacting with others. But when you spend time with yourself, you actually reserve some of that time, that energy for you. And then you can give the rest of yourself to the world. And so after you've giving yourself to the rest of the world, then you can come back and be okay with who you are and know who you are. So that's how I explain mindfulness in 30 seconds. Just learning how to be able to utilize this practice to continue to keep building that foundation for a prosperous and fruitful and loving and jovial life.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who Prince would believe that life happens to them. Hey, you know, so-and-so did this to me. My job did this to me. Neighbor did this to me. Someone cut me off in traffic. So it's all like life happens to me. And what I hear you saying with mindfulness is, yeah, things happen, but you actually make a choice about how your mind sets and how you react to maybe things that occur. So it's what I hear you saying is it's more a choice rather than something that's thrust upon us. Is that true?
When I work with people, when I work with my clients, you know, and sometimes I'll do like a physical exercise for them to help their mental. And I would do like, we're going to run a hill or a mountain. And the first thing they say when they see it, I'm not doing that. And I say, or they say, I can't do that. And in the words of Henry Ford, what do you say? He
said, you think you can or think you can't, either way, you're right.
Either way, you're right. And so when I say, I mean, when my client says, I can't do that, I was just like, oh, you already said that you can't. So it's true. But and what I do is I continue to talk to them and I start walking. And, you know, they're following me as we're walking. And so I'm distracting them from their mindset saying that they can't do something. And so as time goes by, we're at the top of the mountain. And as we get to, and when we get to the top, to the summit of that mountain or that hill, I turn around like, you hear that? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you hear that? I was like, oh, that person down there that said that they cannot do this. I was like, why would you tell yourself that you couldn't do that? And see, that is the cause and the effect, because now they just did something that they said that they could not do. So how were you able to do it? And then that becomes a cathartic moment for them. And they're like, oh, what'd you just do to me, Prince? I just made you realize that you can do it. And you need to stop saying what you can't do. So stop becoming or playing the victim role and understand that, yes, you do have control over who you are. You know, even if I had to break down to a scientific level, we are atoms, you know, with protons and electrons inside of us and neutrons, protons and electrons. And so we have this positive charge and this negative charge. And Napoleon Hill speaks about this, about how when you wake up in the morning, you know, you have a choice to be positive or you have a choice to be negative. And so you get to choose, because, again, we're atoms. And when you look at atoms under a microscope, they're constantly moving. And so, you know, or they're moving. And you want to choose, like, just all the way down to the infinitesimal level, being, you know, from a science standpoint, scientific standpoint, you can see that once you choose to be positive, then that's what you will attract around you. And if the negative comes, then it seems like the positive cannot exist with the negative, and the negative cannot exist with the positive. So just choose the positive more, or embrace that more. Let that, allow that to be the outcome. And then when the negative comes, just be like, oh, it's negative. It's okay. You know, that's a part of it, and continue to keep moving in that direction. And it allows you to stay on that track to having control of the things that you can control, which is yourself.
And Prince, just on that, you know, got an amazing amount of experience there and learning, you know, from what you described at the monastery. I guess for people listening, you know, and I want them to read your book and engage themselves, but what would you give if you were kind of walking down a street and you felt this this negativity in a person. What kind of top two, three tips would you give to anybody, you know, waking up in the morning? You know, we read and hear about a meditating, a switching music on, or going for a walk. What does Prince see or say that says, hey, you know, of all of that, just focus on these one or two things, regardless of deep diving into various stuff.
First thing, that you are alive. That you are alive, because you cannot have these thoughts. You cannot do anything unless you are alive. So the fact that you have an opportunity to be alive and to make a difference, to be able to choose between positive and negative, is a blessing in itself. And then the second thing is the breath. You know, just be happy that you're able to breathe, because that's the bridge between being alive and being deceased, you know, being dead, just period. Like, that's very simple logic. And then from there, once you realize that you're grateful to be able to be alive and to be able to breathe, then now you know that you can make a difference. You can make a difference within yourself. You can make a difference within your family. You can make a difference within the world that you live in. And you can make an impact. So when you understand these three things, then that's where your spiritual self, which is we're spiritual beings having a human experience. Now you can be like, you can use your spirit to say, man, I am happy that I'm alive. I'm happy that I'm able to breathe. And I'm happy that I know I can make a difference in the world. And those are the three things that I would say to people.
And how do you do that practically? So I get up in the morning. I've got to rush to get a train. Where am I doing this? Am I compartmentalizing myself in bed as I wake up? Am I doing it on the train as I'm going into London? Just give me a practical kind of practice session.
So it really starts at nighttime. Like, your day is not done until you prepare for tomorrow. And so what you have to do before you go to bed is prime yourself, just like saying, you know, what you're going to accomplish, how you're going to accomplish, how you want to see yourself. You know, you go to sleep with the dream, but you wake up with the purpose. And so when you wake up in the morning, maybe you need to wake up 5-6 minutes before your alarm goes off. So now you can get up and you can have that time with yourself, because that time with yourself doesn't have to be 10, 15, 20 minutes, 5 minutes. It can be 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute. But as long as you give that time to yourself and you actually enthrall yourself in it, don't just be like, okay, one minute, 2 minute. All right, the long one off. Okay, how about my day? No, and you have to really see yourself as a person, because you wouldn't do that with your kids or with the things that you love. You know, you actually give your attention to that. And so you have to give some of your undivided attention to yourself. And once you do that, now you get up and you're going to start your day. But you have that moment of silence, of peace, of like, I am Simon. I am Michael. I am Prince. And I'm going to enjoy this day. I'm going to conquer the day. I'm thankful for this. I'm thankful for that. And I know I can make a difference. Boom. Let's go catch that train. You know, and that's how you start your day off, because now it becomes adventurous. Now, when you don't do that, now you're just kind of going with life. And, you know, you miss a train. It's like, I missed the effing train. Like, damn it, I'm late for my meeting. You know, and so that is a cascade of negative thoughts that continue to keep building, and it's a domino effect, and all of a sudden your whole day is ruined because you didn't set the tone in the morning time. And you have to understand that life is a rhythm, like a heartbeat. Doom, 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 doom. The sun rises, it peaks, and we come back down, our energy level comes back down, and it goes back up and it comes back down, and so forth. And then we go to sleep, and then all of a sudden the cycle continues. We are living in a cyclic world. And not until we're able to connect with that do we realize, like, it's already been set up for me. So all I have to do is just catch the wave, you know, make sure I have my surfboard, and you know, let's ride the wave, you know.
So, you know, it's funny that it's interesting you mentioned that about how you, you know, kind of conduct your mind. And, you know, I'm kind of it calls to mind sometimes when I've been in on meetings and someone is late. And, you know, inevitably people will apologize. But, you know, there's some people that they'll feel like they have to explain the whole, oh, my car wouldn't start. Oh, I couldn't get my kid ready. Oh, you know, what, blah, blah, blah. I spilled something. I spilled my coffee. And I almost find myself like, I don't do it, but I find myself like emotionally saying, hey, don't bring that crap in here. You know, we were all okay until you walked in. And so what I wanted to ask you about is, I feel like it's contagious. Good or bad, it's contagious, maybe. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, it does. It does. And yes, it is. It is. It really is contagious that, you know, when somebody walks in, because you set a standard for yourself. And so, and when that standard is not met, you know, our mind switches to like, oh, nah, they're not worthy, because they don't have that same standard. They don't have that same discipline. They don't understand the importance of being on time. You know, and these are like simple instructions and lessons that you feel that people do not value. Because you have to remember that we all have different values based upon how we were raised and the environment that we were raised in. And somewhere along the line, if someone did not learn that, you know, then you tend to say, oh man, they're not worthy of this, when they really actually are. And I think when people start trying to justify themselves, it's because it's what you do to try to be accepted again. You know, like they're trying to be accepted. Like, oh, it was my kids, this, and that. You know, as opposed to like, sorry that I'm late, let's get to business. Yeah. You know, because it's more like, okay, I just acknowledge that I'm late. I'm not gonna apologize anymore from that point on. But most people are like, oh, I'm sorry that I'm late. You know, this happened. I'll never let it happen again. And then it happens again. And then now your level of disappointment, you know, it rises. And it's just like, who is this person? Why do they keep being late? But when you think about it, people from different countries, you know, that are not in America or in Europe, you know, they have a tendency of being late, but it's just their culture. And so you just have to understand that different cultures do things different. And it's not the worst thing in the world, you know, for that to happen. The worst thing would be they call and say that they were late and they don't show up to the meeting and they got into an accident. Yeah. So now you don't think about, oh man, they have this excuse about being late. Now it's like, man, oh man, I hope that they're okay. You know, like, man, I really wanted to have this meeting, but now I hope that they're okay. Like, what is it that I can do? So you switch from being unempathetic to compassionate, to being concerned about the person because something happened to them, and you were like, oh, I know they're going to be late, but they actually had a reason why they were absent or they were late. And so it's just those things, like, don't sweat the small stuff. You know, like, yes, you want someone to be on time, but they're not on time. They, you know, there's something that they miss. It's not something that you miss. It's something that they miss for not being on time. And so, yeah, that's how you deal with that. You know, you just breathe and you use that time to continue to take notes or think of other questions that you want to ask and how you can make magic out of nothing. You know, you tap back into your creative space and don't allow anyone to steal that from you because they're not meeting your expectations or your standards.
Makes sense.
So Prince,
go ahead, Simon.
I'm getting the sense and your energy that you're sharing with us now and the positivity and in a way I'm kind of reflecting on some of the challenges you had earlier in your life. And you could describe those as all negative ions in the mix here, but you got an abundance of positivity, which you've kind of deciphered or decoded, I guess, when you did the meditation. You kind of decoded that and said, hey, I get where I'm coming from. These things have worked, and it's a realization. So can we take from that, because this is all about what I wish I knew, that, you know, according to what Mike described earlier and what you've described, you know, this negativity will always be around. Yeah. But it's just that approach that you're describing here. And I'm thinking of the learning that people take is just keep that abundance of sort of positive ions going as much as you can, because they will show fruit in the end.
Right. Yeah, most definitely. Just like just a simple concept, working out. You decide, like, you know what, I want to get stronger, or I want to run a marathon. You know, just say, I mean, if the first day you say, you know what, this shit is not for me. Excuse my language, but just, you know, I just want to be as real as possible. Then you stop. You know, and there's no, you just embody the negativity. And whatever dream or aspiration that you set out to accomplish, you're not going to accomplish it because you don't have the fuel to do that, right? So now this abundance of positivity allows you to continue to keep moving forward, because along the way of your journey, you start to see things that are attractive to you, that actually magnetize you to your dream or your goal. And you start realizing, like, I can do this. And just those simple words that I can do this, I am possible, I am enough, allows for you to see your dream become a reality. And that's the reason why it's important to maintain that level of positivity. It's important to come back and practice your mindfulness and your meditation, because you get derailed. Like, sometimes negativity just embodies you as well. And like, I'm not gonna sit up here and say that I do not experience negativity. You know, sometimes it's in me where I'm like, I guess I didn't meditate today. You know what? I feel like I need to tell someone about themselves, or you know, just share how I feel at the moment in time. And it, that's what makes me human. That's all a part of this convoluted universe. You know, you have to understand that. There are going to be times where a loved one will pass, and that's considered as negative. You know, but if you focus on the negative, then you start to sulk in, you know, oh my goodness, they're not here anymore. Instead of remembering and rejoicing of the impact they had on you and what they taught you and how they molded you to become the person that you are, you know? So yes, it's always great to have a positive attitude, positive energy, because when a negative comes, it comes, and it comes strong. And so you just have to remember to go back to the positivity, because the positivity is going to make you feel good. The negativity, you know, it'll make you feel down, but some people, they embrace the negativity, you know, and that's the other side of things. But, that is, you know, that's their experience, and that's what they want. But if you want the positive, you know, stay in the positive as much as possible. Because whenever you get in the negative, you have to work yourself out of the negative. And so the only way to do that is by being able to focus on the positive. And you got to use your mind, your spirit, and your body to do that. Well, use your spirit and your mind to do that. And then the body is a byproduct, so it follows. You know, so to make it become a reality.
Prince, I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, one of the things I've never told you, but every time I see you, and you know, even last week when we saw each other, I mean, it always makes me smile. And so in my mind, to me, you're not just Prince Daniels Jr., you're like the Prince of Sunshine, because that's what you radiate whenever I see you. But what I respect about you also isn't just the fact that you have this positive mindset, which I think is great. But what I respect most about you is that underlying that positive mindset is a really practical framework of how you get there. And that's why I'm really excited to read your new book, you know, Mindfulness for the Ultimate Athlete, mastering the balance between power and peace. Because I think it's going to be that. So can you tell us a bit about what you have coming out?
Yeah. So I have, you know, the book coming out, Mindfulness for the Ultimate Athlete. I also, I'm already working on my second book right now, you know, and that's, I'm excited about that. It's called Supreme Confidence for the Ultimate Athlete. So I have that. I have Game Beyond the Game, which is a community that I've been able to build for professional athletes, male, female, where this is a safe haven where they can come in and they can refocus and refine their purpose and their vision and have the mindset to carry that out and see it through. And so, and due to the COVID-19, we had to pivot and we went virtual. And so Game Beyond the Game presents Talk That Talk, which is a video series or video cast that we have on Facebook Live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And it's an opportunity for me to be able to speak to athletes, and we talk about that transition, and we talk about the things that are going on in their life, and we talk about these stories that, as you said, what I wish I knew, you know, we incorporate that, and what are some of the things that you would tell your younger self? What are some of the things that you would tell your loved ones if you happen to pass, or you were about to pass in 48 hours or 72 hours, if you only had that amount of time to live? What would you tell your loved ones? How would you sit them down and what would you say to them? You know, these are the things that I want to get people to think about. You know, don't just live life and wait for the moments to happen. You know, actually prepare for them. And when they do happen, know that you've already prepared yourself. So when it happens, you've already had a visual or idea of how you're going to attack it or handle the situation or handle yourself, because then that gives you more control of the control that you feel that you never had. You know, now you understand, like, wow, I'm mentally prepared for this, and now it happened and I handled it exactly how I wanted to handle it. And it was because you exercised those little things. You know, you didn't wait for life to just happen. You actually took control of yourself and prepared yourself to make sure that these things become a reality, become your reality. And for me, like, what I do, I love people that help me, regardless of who you are. You know, I think mentors are like something that everyone needs. And I grew up with a lot of mentors in my family, but whenever I went to the NFL or I went to college, I started to realize the mentors, I didn't have many mentors. And being a black male in America was like, you don't find too many mentors that look like you, unless they're your coach or this or that. And so I had a hard time finding someone, because I was spoiled because my family was my mentors in the beginning. And so now when I leave home, I don't have that family sense of like trusting someone. So I had to figure out who to trust and how to trust them. And what I realized was the people that would give me information without looking for anything in return were the ones that were the mentors that I would need. And I started realizing how valuable mentors were. And Michael, that's why you're my mentor, and I value you. And so every time I see you, I'm reminded of the individual that helped me when I asked for the help, regardless of my skin color. And that always makes me feel like, wow, that's the person that helped me. And no matter what I can always do, if I can never do anything, is just give you my excitement, my love, my appreciation every single time, because I never know what you're going through in life. But if you get a chance to be around me and be in my presence, I always want to make you feel, you know, immaculate. I want to make you feel just so exuberant that, like, when you leave my presence, you're like, man, that was, I felt that, like, I'm going to have a good day. And that's how you walk, and you choose that. And then you pass it on to the next person, because it's a gift that I was given, and then I'm giving that gift back to you. And that's why I was able to make an impact on your daughter without even thinking twice about it, because you had given me something that has propelled me to become a more of a successful individual. And so if I can do the exact same thing by giving that same type of energy, knowledge to your daughter, so she can be incredible, because that's what I want. I want to see people be incredible and amazing. And if I can see that, then I know that I did my job. And so that's how I live my life.
Love that, Prince.
Yeah.
Simon, did you have anything else?
No, it's just fascinating. And your energy and positivity is kind of like a triple Duracell. Yeah, it just keeps on going. So absolutely love it.
Thank you, man.
And I align and I agree with everything you say. I think, you know, and particularly I didn't realize your point about, you know, the current situation, but I was reflecting on it, on what you said, the positivity, because it is challenging for a hell of a lot of people, you know, whether it's work, family, everything else that's going on in the world in each of the countries. You know, I guess the amygdala is working overtime, and you know, the positivity piece is so, so important. So I really appreciate your kind of views and your sentiment there. I think it's so, so important. So thank you for that.
No, you're welcome. If you don't mind me sharing anything, Simon, it was hard for me. You know, like, it was hard for me to even get to this point in my life. Or should I say it was challenging and hard too, but it was very challenging. But what I realized is that the power of mindfulness and meditation. So what happens is we live outside of ourselves, you know? And so when you live outside of yourselves, outside of yourself, you are, the things that you take in, you're not really aware of the things that you take in, because we were influenced by our environment when we were growing up. And so you have a habit of taking in everything that's outside of you. So when you sit down, you watch TV, you listen to the radio, you listen to certain conversations, and you're in this environment, and you are too young to leave and think upon, you know, think for yourself and be like, I'm leaving because I disagree with this. You know, no, you go in your room and you soak, and then you come back and you have to deal with it again. So we have this habit of, you know, like, pulling at all these things that are outside of us. And when you practice mindfulness and meditation, you look within yourself and you start to come back to your core self. Like, when, like, during your formative years, is like any up until the age of 7, that's your core self. And that core self is developed. And then for the next stages of life, you kind of go through the exact same thing. And so what you have to do is learn how to get back to you. Because when you spend time with yourself, you start to learn to get back to you, and you start to love you for who you are. And then that's where the positivity comes, because now you just learn how to love yourself for who you are. And so to love someone else is just like icing on the cake, because you already love yourself. It's just like, you cannot give anybody any money if you don't have money for yourself. If someone asks you for money and you don't have any money, the first thing you do, you get frustrated because you're not able to give them something that they're asking for. But when you have money, I can share it with you. I can share it with you. I can give you some money. And that's that exact same concept applies to being able to love yourself. And once you're able to love yourself, that emits positivity. And that positivity stays with you, and it's, you start to exude it. And it's just like, and you know, people look like, Simon, what the hell? Why you love yourself so much? What happened? You know, it's just like, well, I tapped into something, and I realized that every day we become derailed from the information that we take in. you know, sometimes it's negative. Sometimes it's just something that you just don't agree with. I'm like, eh, like I know that that's wrong, man. Ugh. And so we wear all of these emotions, you know, like clothes, but we never take these clothes off, these emotional clothes off. And we continue to wear them, and it wears down and wears down and wears down. And then after a while, you just kind of, and like, oh, well, that's a part of life. That's the norm. That's how it is. But no, you could take those damn clothes off and, you know, put some new clothes on. And so that is how, you know, like you're able to blossom. It comes from inside, like a seed. You put a seed into a fertile soil. That seed breaks out of that flower breaks out of that seed, and it grows beyond the surface level, and it blossoms. And that's what you have to do. When you understand that simple concept, then your wording of, oh, it's hard, turns into like, man, this is life. This is how I'm able to evolve from this, because it's those words that you say. Yeah, it's hard. But what's harder is being able to change your mindset to become the individual that you desire to be. But when you can do it, it never leaves you from that moment on, because it's like a muscle memory that just never goes away. It just stays there because it's ingrained in you. It's inculcated in your brain, in your spirit. And so you live that. And there's no other way that you can live except that way.
Wow, yeah. Prince, that's fantastic stuff. And love to continue the conversation, but I know you're a busy man. And, you know, thank you so much for sharing your time and sharing your mindset and your insight with us. We really appreciate it. And this has been a fantastic conversation.
We do hope you enjoyed this podcast, and thanks for listening to What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dore. Please join us at whatiwishiknewshow.com. You can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Please share What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dore with your friends. We welcome your feedback and recommendations of new podcast guests and ideas on topics. If you have business challenges, we're also available for advisory and consulting roles. We'd be delighted to listen and help. Just send us an email. Our address is hello@whatiwishiknewshow.com.